Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Sad day for Big Ten and Pac-12 football fans. I feel bad for you guys. I also feel bad for you if you are college basketball fans, because the Pac-12 is canceled all through the entirety of the fall, and the Big Ten may as well have to do it, because if you can't play football outdoors, I don't understand how you can play basketball indoors, which is why I've been saying for a while, if you are not concerned about the idea of canceling college football because you're not a big fan, but you're a big college basketball fan, your entire season is likely to be canceled. For a second straight season, it is likely that we are not going to have March Madness, unless somehow a bubble environment is created for college basketball. Maybe that's easier to do for college basketball because there are a lot fewer players involved than there are for college football. But it would also raise the larger issue of why are these students being treated differently? So I don't think there's any way to put this other than this is a monumental failure of Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, and Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner. They have cost their student athletes immensely, and I believe have done tremendous damage to the overall brand of the Big Ten and the Pac-12. And I actually feel sorry for Big Ten fans out there and for Pac-12 fans out there. Because you guys know, I probably, of anybody who does national radio, love college football more than any other host out there. And I am fighting as hard as I can using my platform, using my audience to try and keep college football going this fall, because the data to me is straightforward and clear. Kids need to be back in school. And by the way, my kindergartner, my youngest kid, goes to in-person kindergarten today. When I finish this program, I am going to go downstairs, eat breakfast with him, and then walk him to his first day of kindergarten, which, by the way, I may end up crying, because I'm actually sometimes sensitive, believe it or not, gonna blow myself up here, because my final kid going to school for, I work from home, so I have my kids around me all day long when they're home from school, when they're young, and this now will be the third of my kids to now go to school, and so I'll have them out of the house theoretically all day, every day now. Now, the truth of the matter is my fourth grader is doing online learning for the next 2 weeks because our county, my kids, my two youngest are in public school, and our county has a hybrid system set up right now where kindergarten through second grade are going in person and third grade to the seniors are right now remote for the first 2 weeks. We're hopeful that after those first 2 weeks, they're going to be back in person, everybody. So I'll still have, for the moment, my nine-year-old home with me. But I'm going to be walking to school, and I'm going to be dropping him off. And I'm probably going to tear up a little bit, because that'll be, unless I can convince my wife to have a fourth, and she doesn't seem to want to have a fourth kid right now, that'll be it for me in terms of having kids who are too young not to be in school. So I want my kids in school, in person, notwithstanding the fact that I'm going to be sad to see the youngest going to kindergarten today. And that's because the data all reflects that kids need to be doing in-person school, whether they're kindergartners like my youngest or whether they are at grad school age. And so as a part of that, if you're going to have kids on campus, if you're going to have them in classrooms and dorms, I don't understand how it's too dangerous to play college athletics in the fall if you're opening up all of these schools. That logic doesn't compute for me. Moreover, you've already been allowing these players to train for months on campus. So how in the world is it suddenly not safe to actually compete? It just, none of this makes logical sense. I believe the Big Ten and the Pac-12 both succumbed to fear porn. It's easy to allow yourself to be overcome by fear if you just sit around and think about bad outcomes all day long, every day, or if you only look at anecdotes. But that's why you need to look at data. And I keep hammering this because it's so significant. College-age kids are more likely to die in a traffic accident driving to campus than they are from the coronavirus on campus. They are more likely to die of the flu, the seasonal flu, college-age kids, than they are to die of the coronavirus. They are more likely to die of drug overdose on campus. They are more likely to die, unfortunately, of alcohol issues on campus. They are more likely to be murdered. They are more likely to be commit suicide. All of these things are wildly more likely ways, unfortunately, for college-age kids to die than from the coronavirus. We don't ever shut down in my life or your life any of these leagues over a seasonal flu. It's more dangerous to kids for the seasonal flu. I mean, it's crazy to me. This is just madness. This is an example of adults who should be making rational, reasonable decisions that are making disastrous choices. And I got to give credit to the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, who so far are willing to continue to fight against the cancellation of the college football season and at least wait until later in the year and see how things are going on campus and also how overall coronavirus infection rates are going to look come around Labor Day, which is still several weeks from now, as opposed to right now. And by the way, the data reflects that the number of coronavirus cases in the South is going to be way, way lower by Labor Day than it is now, because states like Texas and Florida and many others all appear to be on the backside of their outbreaks declining substantially over what we have seen so far in the South. And if that is true and the data continues to travel in the direction that it appears it is going right now, by Labor Day, there are going to be far, far less coronavirus cases in the South, which is primarily where the Big 12 and the SEC and the ACC are located, than there are in any other time right now. So this to me is just a failure. And again, what I feel the most is I feel sad for Penn State fans, for Ohio State fans, for Michigan fans, for Nebraska. I went and bought a Cornhusker shirt yesterday because I respect Nebraska's fighting of the Big Ten decisions more than anybody. I respect Scott Frost, Jim Harbaugh, Ryan Day, and James Franklin for all coming out in favor of playing and supporting all their student athletes. And ultimately, I just feel like in the Big Ten in particular, they really yanked the rug right out from underneath the players. I mean, last week, on this very day, the Big Ten released their fall football schedule. If you are going to release your fall football schedule on Wednesday of last week and then cancel the season 6 days later, what kind of leadership is that? You are yanking these kids around and not providing any sort of substantive, intelligent, rational, adult leadership for them at all. It's just an abject failure in my opinion. I want to bring in the crew. Do you guys feel the same way as me, Danny G, that ultimately the Big Ten and the Pac-12 leadership failed their students, their fans, and all the alums out there? Because frankly, I just don't understand and continue to not understand how can these Big Ten schools be opening with students on campus and arguing that's safe, and then simultaneously also saying, but not safe enough to play sports. Those two things don't compute for me.
Yep. And you were talking about how you may be crying later this morning. Somebody yesterday who I saw crying nearly in tears on, I'll just call it a channel since they called you a host, or didn't put your name on it at all. But Feinbaum was on yesterday afternoon. He was almost in tears. And that's the way all college fans feel. Miserable decision by the school presidents, bringing the players back, putting them through this crazy protocol, all these protocols.
That's right. For months.
Yeah, only to cancel the season. No padded practices had even taken place, but you put them through all this mess. And the thing is, the protocols were working.
Yeah.
That is the most frustrating part. Then you tease the fans by releasing these schedules, which you were so excited to read on the air last week. It's a total lack of leadership. And the only good I can see coming out of this is, can we please maybe figure out a solution to this where we have a commissioner for the Power Five or something like that? Because all these independent conference leaders that aren't being leaders right now, that's not working.
Well, my concern is that if there was a national commissioner right now, he or she would be trying to shut down all of college sports.
Unless it was somebody smart.
But the challenge is, the challenge I think is pretty seismic here, because it's a failure on an epic level. And I don't understand.
The worst part is you're going to kick these kids back to campus or back home, where chances are that that's where they can go get COVID. We've talked about this so much on the show. They are safe inside their program.
Yeah, they're more likely. And that's an interesting question, because they are far. If you are truly concerned about the coronavirus, it doesn't compute for me that you could be opening your campus for any in-person instruction or any dormitory living at all. Like, again, I am on the record. I think all kids need to be back in school. But these Big Ten schools that are welcoming students back to campus, the players are by far more likely, if they are going to get the coronavirus, to get it going to a lab or get it going to introductory English classes or science classes or whatever else, than they are from the highly skilled protocols that have been designed to avoid them getting sick. And let me say this. I don't know, like the NCAA here, I don't think they're going to play in spring, all right? So everybody out there who's like, well, they're just going to play in, no, they're not. They're not going to play in spring, because the same concerns that exist in September that are keeping them from playing are going to exist in February or March, except more significantly, because these are college kids who you then would be requiring to play 20 or 24 games in the space of about 7 or 8 months. There's no way to justify two football seasons. And coaches are recognizing that. Their bodies are young. They can't go through that. Not to mention, it would be like a JV squad, because everybody who has a hope of going to the NFL is not going to play in the spring. But here's a larger issue, by the way. How is this going to work for scholarships now? Because let's say your son is a sophomore at Ohio State right now. Okay, he's not getting to play his sophomore season of football. But all of a sudden, you're going to be bringing in a brand new, maybe I should make it a senior. He's a senior, but he's not good enough to be able to go to the NFL. So he's not getting to play his final year of college football. But then you are bringing in a whole new batch of freshmen starting, ridiculously enough, in January, right? When the new semester starts, because many kids are midterm enrollees. But you only have 85 scholarships for football. So are you suddenly going to get 100 and whatever the math is, 110 scholarships, where you get an extra 25 because your freshman class is going to be arriving sooner rather than later, and your senior class is not getting to finish their college football careers? So is everybody going to get an extra year in the Big Ten and the Pac-12? And if so, that's going to blow up all of the scholarship limitations. It's also going to exist for all fall sports. I'm just using college football as an example. But if it's for golf, I think golf is a fall sport. I don't even know what all the fall sports are. I think volleyball is a fall sport. Whatever all the fall sports are, they all are going to have major scholarship-related issues. And if this is going to exist for a full year, which I think is going to be the case in the Big Ten and in the Pac-12, you're going to have major scholarship issues across the board for all sports that is going to be a mess, a pretty substantial mess. Dub, what stands out to you about the Big Ten and the Pac-12 decision other than them being total cowards and being illogical and failing at leadership?
Well, what stands out to me is this tweet that I saw yesterday afternoon around 3:30 from a gentleman named Sean Callahan, who works for Rivals and covers Nebraska in the Big Ten. He said that Wisconsin AD Barry Alvarez said teams will get to stay on a 20-hour week in the fall with workouts and drill work. So essentially, these teams are still going to practice together.
Yeah.
They're still going to work out together. They're still going to go to class with other students and go to study hall and all that stuff. But the one thing they can't do is play football games. It is absolutely ridiculous.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't
right.
make any sense at all. It's like, okay, does the virus know that they're only practicing and not playing games? Obviously not. So, I mean, when I saw that tweet, it honestly just infuriated me that was going to be the case, that all these teams, all these kids, they're going to still put in all the work, but they're not going to get that game on Saturday to really, you know, show out on the field. And it's just totally ridiculous.
One of the things that's ironic to me is Kevin Warren, who is the Big Ten commissioner who canceled the season, has a son who plays for Mississippi State in the SEC. His son may play college football this year, and he didn't allow anybody's sons in the Big Ten to play. I mean, that's pretty crazy. What about you, Eddie Garcia? What stands out to you? I know you're a huge college football fan as well as I am. What do you think about this decision, Big Ten, Pac-12?
Well, first of all, to Dub's point, when I played high school football, weight training and practice was hell. The game was heaven. And
that's
so
why you did all
yes,
of it.
Yes, exactly. So you're going to tell these guys they got to bust their ass all year round, but they're not going to get any game?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I would pass on that, frankly, if I was a football player. I don't understand, like you said, why this had to be done now. And I'm still stunned that the Big Ten was one of the first teams to tap out, or was, I guess, the first team technically to tap out. I mean, the SEC to me is number one, but for me, I think the Big Ten, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Wisconsin, Iowa, these are, I just can't imagine not having a college football season without these teams taking part in it.
Yeah, and I can't imagine being a fan right now, because I feel like your conference just basically walked up and smacked you right in the face. And said, we don't care about you, and we don't care about data, and we don't care about basic analysis of risk. We just are going to curl up in the fetal position. But to your point, Eddie, I mean, I think there are a lot of players probably feeling like you do. Like, why would I want to work out for 20 hours all semester, busting my ass, when you're not going to allow me to play college football this year? I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't stay in shape, but training for football is a lot different than training like you and me are going to go to the gym and work out. I mean, it's pretty intense. And again, to Dub's point, if you're able to do everything but play the games, where is somebody out there saying, oh, hey, the game, look, football's not safe. There is far, to me, the risk to these players of serious injury is more substantial playing the game of football than it is from actually the coronavirus. So if you're concerned, if you want to be embracing safetyism, the game itself is dangerous, more dangerous to these players by and large than the coronavirus itself. Roberto, you think it's as crazy as everybody else?
Well, I know the Pac-12 schools, I think a lot of schools or campuses are not opening, right? They're doing it from virtual.
I think there are more Pac-12. I'm not sure all of the schools. I think somebody look into that. I think the Arizona schools are planning on being open. I know that the California schools are not planning.
No, yeah, they're not. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what's going on in Washington or Oregon.
So I can understand that maybe that being the reason, well, because the schools are being virtual. In the Big Ten, if schools are
opening,
which
is
going to
happen in the ACC and the SEC and the Big 12 as well, which is why I think those three conferences are sticking to the idea to play.
Yeah, then that's very idiotic then.
I want to encourage all of you out there, by the way, as we get ready for Jeff Schwartz, who actually played football at Oregon. I'm curious what he thinks about the decision to cancel Pac-12. He's going to join us next. But as we go to break, OutKick.com, biggest day we have had on the site in a very, very long time. Yesterday, obviously a lot of attention out there with our interview of Donald Trump, President of the United States. But I want you guys to go sign up for OutKick VIP. We have thousands of you that are rolling in every single week, every single month to sign up for the Outkick VIP. Get the right to comment on all of our articles. You get an Outkick VIP message board. Jason Whitlock and myself interact there on a regular basis. You get the Outkick VIP phone line, which a lot of people have been using. You probably have been hearing them calling into the show to be able to comment on whatever topics we are discussing on a day-to-day basis when we take calls. And you get an autographed copy of my most recent book. We have ordered thousands of copies. I am personally hand-signing all of them. And you yourself can also get hooked up now by signing up for the Outkick VIP. We have monthly cost of $12.99 a month or $99 for the entire year. It's a great gift. It's easy to sign up for. We also have a ton of new Outkick gear, including an anti-Corona Bro t-shirt that I am wearing right now. If you hate the Corona Bros, everybody out there who is trying to get everything canceled because of the coronavirus, you're going to love this shirt. But go sign up for Outkick VIP today.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Joined now by Jeff Schwartz, former Pac-12 football player, longtime NFL veteran. Jeff, what do you think about the Pac-12 decision as a former Oregon football player? Well, obviously, he ties in with the Big Ten decision as well.
I also host a show on Sirius Radio every day called Pac-12 Today. It's going to be hard to host.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
About the Pac-12.
How long is the show?
Well, right now we're on like a summer thing where we just do a podcast and put out. But normally it's 6 to 9 Eastern every Monday through Friday.
Oh, I didn't even know that. So you'd have three hours a day to talk about Pac-12 issues with nothing going on in the Pac-12. That show can't go on, can it?
Well, so for the last 2 months, we've done basically like last night I recorded a two-hour podcast that we played today, essentially.
Yeah.
That's what we've been doing now. And so I don't know. I think we're contractually obligated to have a show on once a day for like two years.
Yeah.
Look, luckily for me, I do cover the NFL, right? So
yeah.
I can, and obviously I watch basketball, I watch baseball, I follow sports. So, I mean, we can do like a hybrid show, basically do NFL essentially on Pac-12 radio. But yeah, I mean, there's a Big Ten station too on Sirius. I know guys that work for the Big Ten station. I mean, look, if you had told me that I lost a job because I was fired, sure. That's like a reasonable thing that could happen. But to say like I can't work because there's just no football, something I never expected to happen. I mean, last night was the weirdest show I've ever recorded, right? I mean, to basically talk about a school, I mean, a conference shutting down. I mean, I have to record tonight. What am I going to talk about tonight? So it's crazy. I'm just sad because I felt like they could have waited. The Pac-12 had kind of done everything right up until this point. They scheduled September 26th, the first weekend, same as the SEC did, just because, you know, they knew they needed time. They've done a good job as far as the players on campus that have already on campus have done a great job. They've stayed healthy for the most part. They've been training. They've done their job. California last week just kind of gave a guideline for how the four schools in California can get back to playing as soon as possible. But a couple of things that kind of, you know, hurt in that is that the Pac-12 agreed, they vowed to play 12 teams or no teams. And right now, California, they'd be behind, right? Camp was supposed to start Monday. They couldn't have camp, right? And so USC, UCLA, Stanford, Cal would have to kind of be behind. I think the Pac-12 was worried about that. I just didn't feel like you had to do this now. The outcome might still be the same in 2 or 3 weeks, but I felt like delay, which is what the Big 12 did, was the kind of the smart way to go right now. And I'm just sad, man. Like, you know, I love my Oregon Ducks. I love the conference, and I wish that we had delayed, but that's didn't happen, and it's going to set our conference back, especially if the other three major conferences play and we don't.
Yeah, so let's talk about that in a context here, under which this is at play. What happens now from a procedural standpoint? Because I don't believe that spring football is going to happen. So some people are immediately going to say, okay, they're going to play in fall. So let's go to the spring football idea in the Big Ten and the Pac-12. I believe it's just, first of all, you're talking about starting the season in the middle of cold and flu season, which in theory would be when the coronavirus is most viable, right? you're also talking about the potential of doing the season before there's a vaccine, because there's no way that football players are going to be at the front of the line to get a vaccine, because by and large, young, healthy people are the last people that need the vaccine. If you look at death rates, they should be the last to get it, because older people by far should be first, right? So all that. Plus, your body as a young person at 18 or 19 years old playing 20 or 24 games or whatever the heck it would need to be in the space of like 7 or 8 months is flat out almost unbelievable. So do you agree with all those things? How would you assess the idea of spring football?
Yeah, it's not happening. I mean, it sounds good. It gives you hope. Look, the Pac-12 announced their cancellation with no assumption of spring football. They said that we have no athletics, and that includes men's and women's basketball, by the way.
Yeah.
Till January 1st. The Big Ten is the one who floated the idea of you know,
spring
playing
football.
Spring football. I got to say, you know, the Pac-12 at least stuck together in this. The Big Ten obviously did not. And they've been all over the place. You know, spring football is not going to happen for the reason you mentioned, right? Is that playing, you know, two seasons in one calendar year is just not healthy.
As someone who played college football, explain to people out there who may not understand, how physically debilitating to your body would it be as an 18-year-old to try to play, let's say, 20 or 24 football games in the space of like 6 or 7 months?
Well, you're just not used to it, right? I mean, you're used to playing 12 to 15 games possibly. You know, the NFL, obviously, you can play, if you include the old schedule, you play 4 preseason games, and, you know, if you make the Super Bowl, you play 23 games, let's say. You know, you build yourself into that, right? Like, you have, you know, you have a first year in the NFL, second year in the NFL, you build into that. You don't build into that in college. You know, players would have no idea how to handle that stress on their bodies. And it might not affect them that year per se, but it will affect them in years moving forward. There's also the fact of an injury that occurs at the beginning or any point of this spring football schedule could keep you out of the fall schedule as well. So you have one injury costing you 2 seasons, which really doesn't happen now unless you have a dislocated knee and you have to miss obviously 2 or 3 years to do that. You know, there's also the consideration, in my opinion, of the weather. Okay. Most places have terrible weather in February and March. Do we really want to play college football when the weather is that bad every week? No, we don't. Like, seriously. I mean, that again, is not great for the players and the playing conditions. And then also the NFL draft, right? I mean, the NFL is under no obligation to move their draft.
Right.
And I don't think they will.
And training for the combine, which is where you and I met, which is the bigger part than the draft itself, is getting ready to go post your measurables in February. Even if the NFL moved their draft back, it's hard to believe that they would need to have the combine still in March or something, right? Which would be right in the middle of the season as well.
Correct. Correct. And so they're going to have to do a lot of different things to make that work if you're the NFL. And the NFL, again, is under no obligation to make those work, especially if the three other conferences play their season, which I think that they're definitely going to try to play their season. I mean, there's no doubt that they're going to try to do it. Whether or not they end up doing it, we'll see. But they're at least going for it. And if the NFL plays on time, which, again, I think they're doing a great job. If you watched Hard Knocks last night, you saw all the different procedures and protocols they put in place. They're going to play. And so their calendar is going to be the same next year. Why are they going to move their calendar around? Because two major Power 5 conferences didn't play their season. So, I do wonder if the players try to transfer like now, like whether or not Penei Sewell, the left tackle for Oregon, can get a waiver and go to an SEC school and be the left tackle, which I'm sure that every SEC school outside of maybe Alabama would want him to come in and play right now. I mean, you're a Vols fan. If you put Trey Smith and Penei Sewell on one side, you'll have the best side of college football. I wonder if that might happen, if they will allow people just to transfer, you know, within the next month.
Well, that ties into my other big question for you is, pretend that you had been a senior at Oregon and your senior year gets canceled. How is the NCAA going to handle scholarship limits when all of these rising seniors in high school now have either accepted or will be accepting scholarships going forward? You have an 85 scholarship limit. For the guys out there that are the Trevor Lawrences or the Justin Fields of the world who are good enough to go to the NFL, I think they'll just go ahead and matriculate to the NFL. But what about like you? You know, like when you were a senior, you were trying to prove that you could be an NFL player. You wouldn't want to just go off into have to give up your career, I wouldn't imagine. I'd imagine you'd want to come back and try to play another year. But all those freshmen coming up, you have 85 scholarships. Are the Pac-12 and the Big Ten going to have to go to 110 scholarships? I mean, how's that going to work?
I think they're going to take the model of the spring sports. And so for the spring sports, it was, and this is around all, and you know, NCAA essentially, is like, if you want to keep that player on for another year, you're welcome to do so. But there's no obligation. So, for example, I'll tell you, like, Oregon kept their, like, two or three best softball players and let all the other ones leave.
Yeah.
So, like, I could see that being the scenario for college football. If you are a contributor, if you are a special teams player, if you're a leader and you want to come back for one more year, they keep you on. So one team might have 92 scholarships, one might have 95. Obviously, the finances of that have to work out for your university, and that's how you kind of build your roster for one season, is you keep, you know, extra scholarships available for the players that you want to come back. I think that's the best way to go, because you're right. You would have to have, basically for a five-year period, 110 scholarships on your team, because you can't just grant – you have to grant basically everyone an extra season.
Right. And everybody, I would think, let's say you're a sophomore or a junior, I'd think most guys would want that option to count this year as a redshirt year, meaning they would get 5 years to play four. So those guys, it's not like it just goes away after 1 year, the fact that you have too many scholarships. This is something that's a rolling problem for years to come.
Well, it's really for some guys 6 years to play four.
Yeah.
Because, so some have already redshirted already.
Yeah, right.
And they're on the track. So it's really 6 years to play four. And that's what I think a lot of guys would choose. I mean, why not, right? You're still in college. You're still on scholarship. You have a chance to get your master's degree now, maybe, for free. So a lot of guys would choose if the schools let them. And again, it's a money issue, in my opinion, because, you know, some schools don't have the money to, and this is a big issue that we're going to see, is that there's just not enough money to do the proper protocols. If you watch, again, I'll refer back to Hard Knocks. If you watch Hard Knocks last night, you saw all the money the Rams and Chargers, every team has done this, has put into making their place, they're up to guidelines for the distancing that has to be done. And the NFL has done a really good job so far of keeping players healthy. Colleges just can't afford that. There's no – Oregon State cannot afford to build an entire new locker room, to have new infrastructure, to make it all work, where Oregon can. There's a discrepancy in what teams can do on the college side. I think we'd see that with the scholarships and how they handle their players returning for one more season.
You also hit on something significant. Do you think a lot of, like, if you were a star Pac-12 or Big Ten player, would you be trying to explore a medical hardship right now to potentially go if the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC are going to play? I know it's super short notice, but would you be trying to figure out if there's a way to get out of a Pac-12 or a Big Ten school to go elsewhere?
I think it depends on your draft status. So, like, for example, I'll use Penei Sewell again, Oregon's left tackle. He doesn't have to play to be the number one tackle off the board in the draft. No one's going to pass him. But if you're like a third round pick, a fifth round pick, yes. But I do not think that an SEC school, a Big 12 school, is going to want to do that at this moment, right? I mean, like, they probably already have a third round pick at that position, fifth round pick at that position. Why are they going to take
you
on,
recruits? What about if you were a recruit who had yet to get to campus in the Big 12 or the Pac-12? Wouldn't you at some point be like, man, I'm sorry, in the Big 10 or the Pac-12, wouldn't a part of you be like, why am I going to school now if I can't play football at all? Like, does it make sense to go somewhere else?
Yeah, but you have to get out of that scholarship, right? I mean, you've already signed you're already technically under scholarship with that team when you sign your letter of intent. So, yes, I mean, players might feel that way. But I think that, you know, in the short term, this is 1 year, right? So, you know, if you're a recruit and you've recruited and you commit to Oregon and you've gone through the process and you love Oregon, you love Mario, you know, you're just going to stay. This is a redshirt year. You're not going to play this year, but you have the chance to obviously play and live out your dream to play for the Ducks next season. If this was a multi-year thing, I think that, yes, people will look at that. But in 1 year, probably not. But look, there's guys at Oregon's, you know, Oregon was the 11th best class last year. I'm sure there's players on that roster that people would love to poach.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Jeff Schwartz, appreciate the time, my man. We will talk to you next week.
All right, take care, bud.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Petros, you got bumped yesterday, AM 570 LA Sports, wildly successful Petros and Money Show, for the President of the United States. How did that make you feel?
It kind of shrunk the world for me a little too much, to be honest, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
The leader of the free world, and then me, is a bit of a, I don't know, wacky comparison. But
yes.
I am that person with the Taylor Swift music, and good morning to you, and congratulations on your interview with the president.
What'd you think of it?
I thought it was, I mean, I remember a long time ago when I first started the show with Matt, Rudy Giuliani came on.
Yep.
When he was campaigning for president, and it was similar. A guy was very complimentary of the show, knows how to be interviewed, knows how to guide an interview where he wants it to go, and I listened to the whole thing. It wasn't very different from what we hear most of the time from the guy because he's so available.
Yeah.
And does so much talking, which is really, really amazing. But I did listen to it and got a bunch of Twitter followers just off being bumped. Amazing.
Here is something else I think is interesting, and I can't get past this. Trump himself called Danny G, right?
Yeah,
I think that's wild to me because you know this. So many athletes or coaches or, you know, people who are in positions of prominence have someone else call.
Please hold for Keenan Allen. Please hold
yes.
for
Yeah, like you're saying, like Keenan Allen, who is, I mean, a talented player, but it's not like most people would have any clue who Keenan Allen is. He has an apparatus in place in order for you to talk to him. Like somebody else calls on his behalf. Danny G, I think you can, like the president just said, hey, like you picked up the phone and it was Donald Trump.
Yeah, and it shocked me. I was frozen at first because I expected his press secretary or somebody from the White House, and instead it was Donald saying, I'd like to talk to Clay, please.
I mean, that to me is just amazing.
That is, it's interesting. I mean, it's on such a, like saying, it shrinks the world. I mean, it's on such a different level. But I remember when I was a USC football player, our head coach was second time around. He had won a national championship there in the 70s or 80s, John Robinson. And he now works with Coach Ogeron down at LSU as a giant middle finger to USC. And he was a really gregarious, very, very talkative, really, really good communicator. And he did all his own media. I remember, like, he would call Fox Sports and say, okay, I'm ready. You know, he didn't have his SID do that kind of stuff. But when it goes all the way up to the presidency, it's pretty shocking, especially since, like, I text with Danny G during the day and stuff, and I know what that studio looks like. And usually when the phone rings, it's, you know, Steve DeSager with an update on the Major League Baseball scores or, you know, who won an extra inning. So it was a very different day for Fox Sports Radio, no doubt about it, and it's history.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said to Danny G, the thing I was most nervous about was our phone system working, was our technology holding up.
I was thinking of that. Like,
yeah.
And I don't, you know, I only joined your show on the phone. Like, I was like, gosh, I wonder, you know, I hope their phone doesn't blow up or something.
Yeah, you and me both. All right, speaking of blowing up, you mentioned that you played football at USC. You are very familiar with the Big 12, with the Big 10, with all of college football. But the decision by the Big 10 and the Pac-12 to cancel, did it surprise you? Is it the right decision?
Well, it happened pretty fast. And I am not a person that can say whether it's right or wrong. My inkling is that if you can play pro football and the money that circulates through the Power Five, you can play college football with a very similar protocol.
Yep.
If you just admit to yourself what it really is, which is a business. Now, the players don't get paid, and that's a huge problem, and that's always been a problem. But the problem with the players not getting paid is something that was set up in the 70s called Title IX. So something progressive that happened almost like 40 years ago, or more than 40 years ago, is keeping something from progressive happening now.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it's well said. A lot of people don't understand that, but Title IX requires that women basically receive the same treatment in college athletics as men. And so if you are going to pay football players or men's basketball players, theoretically under federal law, you would have to pay women as well. And the entire athletic department structure collapses if every athlete has to be paid.
Right. And you really can only pay the revenue sports.
That's
right. There's got to be a way to pay those guys while they're at your institution of higher education as well, which is not easy. So these conversations get a lot bigger. And really what it's about is just defining college football for what it is, a billion-dollar industry wrapped inside our institutions of higher education. If they want to continue, especially this year, they're going to have to get out from under the umbrella of the NCAA, because it's obviously just too complicated for them to figure out regionally. I mean, the interesting thing about the conferences is, I mean, the other than being in the Pac-12, what does Arizona State and Stanford
have
or
in common?
Utah and Cal have in common? I mean,
right. Nothing.
And that's why you see all this different splintering. I believe that somebody this year is going to play college football. And if they pull it off, like the NFL looks like they're going to be able to pull it off, at least right now, then it's going to make the Pac-12 look more toothless than ever. And we're very toothless. I mean, canceling football is one thing in the Pac-12, but just sitting here and waiting for the Big Ten to say it's okay,
like a
huge cuck. It's like, make your own freaking decision, for God's sakes. And then for the power of the Pac-12, USC, to just not even act like they want to play, like the Ohio States and the Michigans and the Nebraskas of the world, for USC just to take it lying down just goes to show how far we've fallen on the West Coast. I'm not saying that it's the absolute wrong thing to cancel. People are running whatever doctor they want out there to confuse everybody, and it's a very confusing time, and they are players that are not paid. But what else are they going to do? I mean, these players are primed and ready to play. This is what they do. We are belittling and robbing them of their identity. I mean, think about this, all these incongruities, Clay. The best player on Purdue's football team is a guy named Rondale Jones. You heard of him?
Rondale Moore, I think, right?
Moore, excuse me, yeah, Rondale Moore. Rondale Jones is a different guy.
Yeah.
Rondale Moore is a great receiver. He could have gone a lot of different places. He ended up going to a smaller school to be a big fish, or he really liked Brom and the recruitment out of the Louisville thing. Whatever reason, he's at Purdue. Purdue's inviting the biggest freshman class in the history of the school or something this fall.
Yes.
They're moving into the dorms right now.
That's right.
Rondale doesn't get to play right now because his team canceled. He could have gone to an Ohio State or an SEC school. At least Ohio State's acting like they're giving it a try. And if you can't protect Rondale from playing football, how the hell are you supposed to protect the biggest freshman class coming in the
history
of Purdue?
That's my question. That's my question that I've been hammering on the Big Ten in particular.
That's a pile of BS.
Yeah, right. It just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And that's another problem. Like, the universities, if they want to cancel and say, we're doing this to protect the players, hey, I don't blame them. Suddenly, they care about the players' well-being. If you cared about protecting players, you probably would just get rid of football. But let's put that aside. Let's say the universities really do care about protecting players, and they're finally taking a stand, and they're willing to take the financial hit, obviously, in the Pac-10 and the Big Ten right now. That's more noble than I thought they were, but then where's the nobility when you're charged, if you're USC and you're still charging something like $60,000 a year to go to school online?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a college experience. I mean, these places maybe stop building like a giant tower of Babel to the sky this year and do what the rest of us or many of us have had to do. Dig into your savings. Try not to fire everybody and batten down the hatches for a year if that's really who you are. But there's so much contradiction that it really is just a product of our sport, right, Clay? I mean, we love college football because it's really, really scattered, and there's a lot of arguments, and it's regional and it's yep. tribal. But that's also going to be a huge stumbling block to getting everybody on the same page.
All we do is argue about college football, and that's one of the things that makes it fun. But it's also, in a situation like this, one of the things that makes it start to collapse. But I just go to the essence of what you said. Big Ten schools in particular, because I think a lot of Pac-12 schools are not welcoming students back to campus. But if you are going, like you just said, Purdue is welcoming the largest freshman class in the history of the state, in theory. If you're going to welcome all of these kids across all these different Big Ten campuses back to school, you can't then tell me that it's not safe for the athletes who are going to be going to school there to play because of the coronavirus. If it's not safe for them to play because of the coronavirus, how is it safe for you to have everybody back on campus? And here's the other thing, Petros, I think the Big Ten schools are saying, we're not playing, but we're still going to train for 20 hours a week, theoretically, for football. Like, you played football. Is there anything less fun than being in the entire semester continuing to do 20 hours of football work when you're not going to get to play?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to probably lose a team that way
yeah.
or risk it potentially. I mean, none of us have ever dealt with anything like this before, but I don't think people really understand that these players do not need media members, people in social media, and university administrators that relate with them, not at all, really, because the players on campus are so much different than everybody else that's there. They suddenly don't need these people looking out for their well-being. I mean, they never did before, and the risks of playing college football have always been gigantic, multifold risks. But when it comes to the virus, I mean, I'm no medical expert, and I'm not one of the doctors that any of these conferences have run out to say it's okay or not okay to play, but it seems to me that a bunch of students at a bar or hanging out on campus or doing whatever college students do as freshmen in a dorm is a lot more problematic than 85 elite scholarship athletes trying to put it together. But this thing is filled with contradiction, and it's hard. I mean, Ohio State right now doesn't really have football, and they're the premier program in the world, or one of them, one of the top three, and they're playing high school football in Ohio right
yeah.
now, or getting ready to. Utah is playing high school football this week, but the Utah Utes, who have a bunch of guys who are trying to develop and play in the NFL, they're not going to play. You know, that's a huge issue. And the other, I mean, if there is one thing I would blow a whistle on health-wise, it's playing two seasons in 2021.
Yeah. Which is what, for people out there who are like, oh, well, they'll be fine, they'll play in the spring, I've been saying for a long time, spring football is not really a viable possibility. But as somebody who played at USC, you think that's crazy?
Well, it's a bludgeoning. I mean, it's going to affect – I mean, one guy doing this or that, or a guy playing in the World League or the XFL or whatever and then turning it around and going to an NFL camp, I mean – individual stories of these kind of feats are not uncommon, but when you do it on a macro level, it will devastate the sport. And if you really want to put people's bodies at risk, I mean, we're not talking about playing an extra tennis or golf season or basketball even, where the guys play in the Olympics in the summer and it wears them down. I mean, we're talking about a sport where people literally bludgeon each other, and it has to be mitigated throughout the year with your body in a certain kind of way. Throwing that chemistry off, which we already have done at the highest level and in college, is going to have an effect. But I think playing two seasons, 2021, you know, nine games in the spring and then turning it around and trying to do what we normally do in the fall, I think, I mean, my guess would be that would be have untold detrimental effects on a lot of players' bodies and would be a huge story and devastating if we tried.
You told us last week, and I thought it was well said, that your average college football player believes he is, like, indestructible, right?
Sure.
That is what you have to believe. And also, look, let's be honest, your average 18, 19, 20-year-old person in general believes that. It's just that college football players believe it even more, almost on steroids, right? Whatever the average 18 or 19 or 20-year-old
is. Well, think of who you are.
Yes.
I mean, you're probably the prom king. I mean, you're the biggest
You're
star
the biggest,
from your
baddest
hometown.
Guy from your high school.
Yeah, everybody is watching you.
Yep.
If you get on the kickoff team, everybody in your hometown, you know, watches you run down on the kickoff like you just won the Super Bowl. I mean,
yep.
You feel like you could jump over a car, probably have a hot girlfriend, you know, shotgun beers.
Sounds like an amazing life, I'm going to be honest with you. But the point
Except
on
you get your head turned into a canoe every day. Yeah.
The point is, people who play college football are assuming a high level of risk, right? For the physical danger of football itself.
Right, and that is their identity.
That's right. So the idea
exactly
that you would take
are.
That away from them based on your fear for them is that there's a huge contradiction or hypocrisy there, because you're not concerned about CTE. You're not concerned about the body being physically beaten up every single week in order to play football. You're concerned about a virus which has like a 99.99% recovery rate for young, healthy people. It just doesn't make any sense at all from a purely logical perspective.
Yeah, but we don't live in a time of logic.
Unfortunately.
And, you know, it's interesting to me to watch the whole thing unfold, because players do feel that way, but you also have to know, like, people aren't stupid. I mean, This is bringing out more of the humanity of football, whereas, you know, video games and fantasy football took a lot of that away from us in the last decade, where we don't think of a lot of these guys as human. I mean, there's most NFL players that you recognize their name, you'd have a hard time recognizing their face.
Yeah.
Because they wear helmets. So if this does one thing to kind of humanize the player in people's eyes, that's not a bad thing. But at the same time, most all of these guys are completely and totally bought in to this as their lives, and they know the deal. And some of them do a great job taking advantage of it at the universities with what's offered now. Some of them don't. I think they should get more, but there's a stumbling block there. The one thing that really, just really quick, because I know you got to go, it really jumps out to me is there's always been a glaring issue, Clay, of how unjust college football is. Like 2 months into my career, I realized what was happening and who I was to them and what they were to me. It was glaring. And so I guess I just feel a little goofy that suddenly it's become a huge topic, and suddenly it's obvious to everybody, you know, how awkward it is to have these teams in colleges and universities. It's always been that way to me. So it's just, I guess, I feel a little bit underwhelmed by everybody suddenly having these jolts of awareness about the sport we've covered for a long time.
Outstanding stuff as always. He's Petros Papadakis, AM 570 LA Sports, at The Old P on Twitter. Thank you, my man. We'll talk to you next week.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
It's pretty fascinating to think about what's going to happen in the NBA bubble. We'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow probably, but it appears that the Trailblazers are going to be in. And we'll see whether the Grizzlies, basically it comes down to who's going to play their starters and who's not down the stretch here, because otherwise the Grizzlies look like they may go 1-7, and it looks like the Phoenix Suns may go 8-0, and the Trailblazers, I think, would be 6-2. Be a pretty epic collapse by the Grizz, the same kind of epic collapse that we saw from the Big Ten and the Pac-12 with their decisions to shut down football and all fall sports. I can't get over how illogical this is and how few in the media are actually pointing out the lack of logic. Again, if you are going to have open campuses, which I think we should, as soon as I get finished with this show in 3 minutes, I'm going downstairs and I'm going to get my kindergartner ready to take him to school. If I believe, which I do, kindergarten all the way through grad school should be going on, I fail to see the logic at all for how Big Ten schools can have all of their students on campus, for how they can have 20 hours of continuing training going on for all of their football players, but they can't play games. It doesn't compute logically. If students are under too much risk to play football, how are they not under too much risk to be back on campus? To me, this looks like the Big Ten presidents making an arbitrary and capricious decision that isn't supported by any existing forms of logic whatsoever. Either it's safe to be back on campus and do all of the things that take place on a college campus in a normal fall, go to the library, go to the cafeteria, live in the student dorms, go watch the football team play a football game, or it's not safe to do any of those things. I don't understand how you can shove thousands of people into tiny rooms in dorms and say, hey, go to class, kids, and simultaneously not allow sports to take place. It just doesn't make any sense at all, but for the fact that the Big Ten presidents and the Pac-12 presidents succumb to fear porn. And what should be happening is a lot more people in my industry of sports media should be raising this as an issue and saying, hey, how in the world is it possible to open up campuses, do all of the things entitled and involving college life, and not be able to play sports? These college kids are under greater danger from the seasonal flu than they are from the coronavirus. The decision to take away football from them makes absolutely no sense. I appreciate all of your feedback from our Donald Trump interview yesterday. Go download and subscribe to the podcast. Give us 5 stars. You guys are fantastic. Thanks for making us the most influential and the largest morning sports show anywhere in the nation from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. There ain't even a close second now. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.